Welcome, everybody. Thanks for the time today and joining us for the DWC Healthcare Provider Quarterly Meeting. We are glad to have y'all join us, give y'all an update on what's happening here at the division. And these meetings are intended to be informal. We would like y'all to, we encourage open communication. We really welcome your feedback and we'll do our best to answer any questions y'all may have. And we're going to go ahead and take a quick look at the agenda, what we've got. Here we go. And there's a quick look at the topics that we'll be covering today. Before we get rolling, I'm going to go ahead and give our usual meeting updates and reminders. And please stay muted during the presentation so that everyone can hear our speakers as clearly as possible. There will be opportunities to ask questions of the presenters at the end of the presentation. You may also post questions in the chat, and either myself or another DWC staff member will try to get to those as best we can. After the meeting, if you have any other feedback or additional questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to me or the external relations team. You can contact me directly, or I will definitely go ahead and post our general mailbox as well, so y'all can send your questions there if needed. And with that, I'm going to turn things over to Commissioner Nelson for his remarks to kick us off.
Thanks, Kate. Thank you all for being here today. As you probably noticed, we have a new date and time for this meeting. It was an effort by us to kind of better accommodate to our schedules. We know healthcare providers are busy. We generally know that a meeting during lunch and maybe on a Friday is a little easier for you all to attend. So hopefully that's the case. And a little heads up about our future meetings. Our next meeting this summer is going to be a hybrid meeting. So what that means is we're going to host it here at our Austin office in the new Barbara Jordan building downtown. We'll also have a broadcast online like this. So I know a lot of people have missed the opportunity to come in and network and to kind of see some people within the industry and just to kind of talk and catch up. So that'll be an opportunity for you all to come in and do that. And hopefully if it all goes well, technology and all that, we'll try to do that more often moving forward. So a few things I wanted to give updates on today. For starters, session is coming up. I know it seems far away next January, but we are already in the process of getting geared up for that. Part of that process is looking at legislative recommendations. We're required by the legislature to give them recommendations on changes we think need to be made to the statute and to the system. So we are starting to put together ideas for that. We are going to put out a solicitation sometime in the next month or two. Asking for your input, asking for your ideas and for your thoughts on what needs to be changed to improve the system. We're really looking for ideas on ways to create efficiencies, to reduce some administrative burdens. So keep that in mind and be on the lookout for that. And, this is a good opportunity to get stuff done. Last session, going into session, we suddenly got a notification from the comptroller's office that designated doctor and other certifying exams were going to be subject to state sales tax. So basically an 8% tax that doctors were going to have to collect and remit back to the state, causing a headache for doctors and a new cost to the system. Luckily, we were able to work with stakeholders and with the legislature to get an exemption to that sales tax. So that's kind of an example of things that can get done through this legislative recommendation process. So that's that. Few other things I wanted to mention. We just got done with our medical billing complaint rule that had been out for comment. This is a rule that really just kind of cleared up a loophole or an omission on our part. Some healthcare providers were using our complaint process to kind of circumvent the medical fee dispute resolution process. So we kind of tightened that rule up. Mainly, it clarifies that healthcare providers can't submit a complaint on billing issues if it's been over a year since the date of service. We didn't receive any comments on that, but it had been out for comment for a while. We did put it out through various means, but I did just want to put that on your radar that will be going into effect soon. A few things that we have on the horizon. I know I've mentioned it a few times, but our timeline's getting a little more organized at this point. We are going to begin a project looking at transitioning from the AMA Guides to Impairment, the 4th edition, to the 6th edition. I think this is a long time coming. think the fourth edition is older medicine. The sixth edition is just more modern. But with a transition like that, there's a lot that we need to take into consideration, a lot that we need to review. So we're going to be doing a project, doing a study with our medical quality review panel to see what the impact of a change to the fourth, from the fourth to the sixth edition would be. Our plan originally had been to start that process already. However, we've been waiting on the AMA to publish part of their MSK guides that are going to be part of the sixth edition. I think we are pretty firm that they're going to be coming out with those in July. So as soon as those come out, we're going to start doing case studies. We're going to start looking at examples of, you know, different conditions, different cases, and what that would do to impairment ratings. So we can be ready for any changes that need to be made to the system. You know, it's not as easy as flipping a switch, just going from the fourth to the sixth. We need to obviously engage with stakeholders. We need to worry, consider training, not just designated doctors, but other certifying doctors. We need to make sure that people understand the guidelines. We also need to see if any other changes need to be made on our end as far as rules to change, or if any changes need to be made to the benefit structure. You know, a lot of the benefits in our system are tied to impairment ratings, and those are all statutory. So we need to consider if any changes need to be made to the statutes to kind of help balance out any change that we see going to the sixth edition. I do think it's a long time coming. So, you know, be on the lookout for more from that, but it is going to be a big part of what Mary Landrum and her group and the MQRP are going to be working on over the next year and a half, really. Another thing that is finally about to go into effect, which we are very excited about, is our designated doctor fee increase rules. As you all know, we've been working on these for almost 2 years now. It's been a long time coming. It's the first raise that DDs have received really in about 20 years. So we have been doing a big push to promote that, to let doctors in our system know, to let doctors who have left our system over the years for various reasons know, and to let just other healthcare providers out there to know that these changes are coming. And it's already started to pay off. These rules go into effect officially on June 1st, but already we've seen a significant change in the total number of doctors that we have. In April of 23, we had 236 designated doctors. Today we have 303, and that includes an increase of 15 physicians, which is something that we're excited to have. But hopefully we see more doctors coming in. We've seen more doctors registered for some of our trainings. So I think it's really going to help improve the doctor pool that we have and hopefully allow us to recruit and retain some of the best doctors that we have. So that's all that I kind of wanted to touch on for now. I'll have a little bit more at the end, and I'll also open it for questions at the end. So for now, I'm going to turn it over to the next speaker.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Commissioner. So before I actually get started on my presentation, I do want to add just a little bit to what Commissioner Nelson mentioned, and that's in reference to the designated doctor rules. Obviously, we're very excited about the fees going into effect June 1st. But that also includes increase of fees for doctors that are certified in MMI and IR. So treating doctors, if you do impairment ratings, there is an increase for you. RME doctors, if you do RME exams, including exams for appropriateness of care, all of that is covered. And I'm not going to go into a lot more detail because Santiago has quite a bit of information to share in reference to that. So to get going, let me just tell you that I'm actually a little bit excited about today's meeting because we're hoping that we're shaking things up just a bit for you. The reason we're doing this is because we want to engage you more during these meetings. We want you to ask questions. We want you to participate. We don't want this to be just a one-sided presentation, if you will. What I'm hoping that we're doing with these meetings is, in essence, providing you with information that's going to help you in your day-to-day operations. You know, for starters, I'd like to share some things that we tend to hear about the WorkComp system. We hear outdated information from a system that was in effect decades ago. We hear that our system is broken. We hear that our system is full of problems. Sometimes these are the reasons doctors give as to why they do not participate in workers' compensation or in our system. However, the reality is that our system is stable. Actually, in case you didn't know, our system serves as a model for many jurisdictions. Texas has what many other states wish or want, okay, from us. So what do they want? They want a healthcare provider outreach and education program like the one we have. They want evidence-based medicine treatment guidelines. They want a pharmacy formulary. They want fee guidelines that are fair and reasonable. As a matter of fact, did you know that professional services are generally paid 2 times higher than Medicare? And yes, you heard correctly, 2 times higher than Medicare. This is better than most payer systems. When doctors or healthcare providers hear this, they're often surprised. And so we're trying to get the word out and let you know about that, right? So that you can take the opportunity to treat workers' compensation and be paid well. However, we know that our system is not perfect. We deal with complex situations. And while the complex situations are not the everyday situation, they tend to evoke anxiety and stress. I'm sure you can agree with me that the complex situations are the ones we remember the most, certainly over the ones that do not require any of our time. This is just as true for you as it is for us. Let me tell you that thousands of claims or injuries are resolved without a DWC employee ever getting involved. I venture to guess the same is true for your operations. That said, since issues do arise, our healthcare provider outreach team focuses its outreach on the issues that cause disputes or complaints. Our goal is simple: provide the necessary tools and training to help you in getting these issues resolved or eliminate them as much as possible. Our health and safety presentations today will show you some of the tools available to mitigate problems as they arise when treating work comp patients. We want to help you better navigate the world of work comp and make it easier for you. Before I cover the next 3 slides, though, let me mention one last thing. Communication is key to success. I know this sounds so cheesy, but it's true. Calling an adjuster and inquiring about a denial can go a long way to resolve an issue. If nothing else, you may be able to better understand the reason for denial or reduction of a bill. Having that conversation may shed some light of how best to submit a reconsideration or appeal that is specific to the issue at hand. Doing so will be more beneficial than having templated forms that say the same thing for each denial or dispute. The more communication you have with the carriers, the better chances you have to get your bills processed timely and accurately. I can tell you this is something that Amy Ridge and our other healthcare provider outreach folks talk about during our webinar presentations. As an example, you want to pay attention to Dan's presentation today. Dan is our Deputy Commissioner for Compliance and Investigations. I don't want to steal his thunder, but it is important for me to make this point. He has a slide that will give you number of complaints received. The slide will also tell you that the bucket with most complaints is regarding medical benefit delivery. He can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe this category includes bills not paid timely. I like to call attention to the outcomes of these complaints as the higher number of complaints are found to be not confirmed, okay? Then we'll provide more detail to what this means. But again, the reason I wanted to bring this up is because I believe that communication could have resolved the issue. It could have prevented perhaps from you filing a complaint because the issue was resolved, or it could have helped you provide information to prove up the allegation, okay? Next slide, please. So these next 3 slides are the typical slides that we would present from the Office of the Medical Advisor, giving you numbers about the complaints received, which is on this slide, and the actions of those complaints. And these are just quality of care complaints. It's a subset of what Dan's presentation is going to provide you. Next slide. This right here provides you with the number of reviews that were initiated or completed in this time period. Next slide. And then this slide provides you the enforcement actions that or OMA cases that have been reported to enforcement. So as you can see, these numbers are very small. And over time, these numbers have continued to decrease, which I think it's good because it shows why, or it's an example of why our system is stable. But as a result of the numbers going down, I think the information has become less relevant to you. So moving forward, we do not plan on providing this information on a quarterly basis, but rather at the beginning of each year to give you the numbers for the prior year with information such as what does the activity look like? What are the trends? More information that may be beneficial to you. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Tracy, our next speaker. Tracy?
Thank you, Mary. Next slide, please. I'm going to take a few moments to go over a couple of slides with you about claims before I hand it over to Amy. I want to show you these numbers that go over the fiscal year for 2022. In part, a lot of this information is found online. This is an inverted pyramid that shows the total of claims of 239,492. These are individual injuries, not medical bills. Of these claims, 121,668 were report only claims. This means that these are lost time claims. As we go down the pyramid, we see that 12,962 claims had designated doctor appointments. The purpose of these designated doctor exams is to resolve questions about injured employees' claims such as MMI, impairment rating, and extension injury, and possibly return to work. The next level is the number of claims that went to a benefit review conference. There were 10,896 claims. The purpose of the BRC is to resolve issues or disputes about a claim such as extent of injury or compensability. Of this number, only 5,000 proceeded to the contested case level. From this number, only 2,134 went to an appeals panel. The last level shows that only 89 of these claims had a judicial review. So as you can see, as it goes down the pyramid, the numbers get smaller. Next slide, please. Now I would like to show you the breakdown of the number of bills. Before I address the numbers, keep in mind that 50% of claims, injuries or injuries in the system are under certified network. Fee disputes for network claims do not come to DWC, but are rather resolved through the network and TDI. I say this because as you can see, there were a total of 2,543,415 bills in the system, including bills for services rendered through a network. Of these bills, 2,030,561 were professional, 348,584 were pharmacy, 161,493 were for institutional, and 2,797 were for dental. Of these bills, we, the medical fee dispute resolution, received only 3,022 medical fee disputes. This is less than 1% of the medical bills. So we have a very small percentage that are actually ending up in the medical fee dispute resolution. The majority of the bills are understand the percentage that goes through the reconsideration process, sometimes then to the medical fee dispute resolution. So I wanted to give you a quick snapshot of the kind of bills, the bills that are coming in, the claims that are coming in, and the breakdown of that. I'm now going to pass it to Amy Rich. Thank you.
Thanks, Tracy. Hey, everyone. My name's Amy Rich. I'm a proud member of a very active healthcare provider and return to work outreach and education team. Our team does our best to provide solid educational opportunities, information, and guidance to our system participants on a seemingly complicated, but I think it's interesting, workers' compensation system. The purpose of my presentation is to highlight those opportunities that you can take advantage of. Next slide, please. I'm going to start out with the return to work side of the house. There are many opportunities to learn about one of the most important system goals of workers' compensation, and that is to return injured employees back to work and to their lives as soon as it's medically safe and appropriate. We see this goal as a shared responsibility, thus we're going to offer training to all of our system participants about workers' comp. On this slide, on the left-hand side, you'll see the live training opportunities that are currently being offered. Some of these are in person and some are offered virtually. Currently, we partner with the Texas Workforce Commission where we speak about return to work at their Texas Conference for Employers. And this is offered all over the state. at the TCEs, they mostly talk about employment law and developing HR manuals. But when I get to speak during our slot, I talk to the employers about developing a return to work program for their injured employees. That way, when they're working with you, the healthcare providers, they understand the importance of their role, which is offering modified duty and returning an injured employee back to the workplace so they can recover while they're still connected to the employer. And they understand that injured employees are going to heal better and faster when they do that. So this helps the healthcare provider and the employer stay on the same page. Also, employers, adjusters, or other interested parties can request a return to work employer course, and you can receive 1 hour of general insurance education credit. So if you want that course, you can go to T under our A through Z, T for training on our website, and you will find the course information and send an email, and we'll set up a time for you and your staff to listen to this course. And if you need continuing education, we can send that to you. Lastly, the return to work topic crosses over into the healthcare provider world too. And we provide return to work training to our healthcare providers, and it gives them, this particular course gives them information on how to and when to complete the work status report. This is part of our boot camp series offered to healthcare providers that I'll talk about more in just a minute. On the right-hand side, this lists resources that are currently or being considered to be on our website for your use. We have a very robust return to work page. If you haven't been to it, it's under R for return to work. And it has tabs for each system participant and their role in facilitating return to work. We need to remove all barriers that injured employees perceive in returning to work. And that includes an employer return to work guide to creating a return to work program, and that's under the employer tab. There's also a recording under that tab that's the return to work course for employers. Also, you'll find that a similar, very similar video under C for comp courses. These are the educational courses we're offering on a quarterly basis. The last topic we're offering is new material that is available upon request. It is a three-part series that involves practical information for a healthcare provider when they're communicating and negotiating tolerance with an injured employee about return to work. It also involves a case study where the return to work and treatment guidelines are used to help guide decisions. Next slide, please. Now we're going to talk about the healthcare provider outreach and education offerings. First, I'd just like to mention that there is a statute that we are guided by in our team, and that is called coordination with providers. It's 413.004. And it says the division shall coordinate its activities with healthcare providers as necessary to perform our duties. And that includes conducting educational seminars on our rules and procedures and providing information to and requesting information from professional peer review organizations. That means we try to stay in touch with your professional medical associations. As a matter of fact, we, Tracy and I, are going to the TexMed conference, which is the Texas Medical Association conference, next week. And we've been to several other conferences for your professional and medical associations. The information on the next slides are some of the ways that we comply with this statute. So for this, yes, that one. Same format on this slide. On the left-hand side, we have our live offerings of virtual. These are all virtual healthcare provider educational opportunities. The outreach team offers a boot camp series, which last year we did one time. It's a series of eight webinars being offered twice this year. So we've already conducted our first one. The second one will start at the beginning of August. This is a great opportunity if you are onboarding new workers' compensation staff in your clinic or your office, or maybe you need a refresher for your existing staff. It's always good to listen in on the questions because you can learn from other people's question. So even if you think it's the same material, it's always good to attend it. Yesterday, and it's free, so that's good. Yesterday, we tried something new, and that is to echo what everybody else has been saying, is that we want interaction with our healthcare providers. So we had our first connecting with Comp Connection. It was a live Q&A where we opened up the floor to any and all questions from healthcare providers, which we usually do during our webinars, but this webinar was dedicated to you, the healthcare provider, for any question you had. So that was yesterday. We're evaluating how we did still. So for each of our webinars, we offer an interactive PDF document that's part of your attachments when you're sent the login instructions to our webinar. And this is sort of a Wayfinder document. It is a live PDF document that you can save to your desktop and be able to click from that to relevant pages on our website that are just relevant to healthcare providers. So it's just a fun document that'll help you navigate our website, which I think our website's pretty good in the first place, but again, just another tool for you. Now we have other topics on the calendar besides the boot camp. So take a look at the training calendar and register. Again, it's free and it's at lunch. Well, it's at lunchtime. Yep. So maybe you can work it into your daily activities there. On the right side, we'd like to remind you that we have Comp Connection, and this is a telephone service, consultations to you and your staff, and an email box. So I'll provide that in just a minute. And it takes all of your workers' compensation questions. This is your hotline. And we tend to provide those answers in a timely manner. And if we need to elevate past that and talk to upper management or other program areas, we do that for you. So it's a great service for our healthcare providers. And we've been offering the Comp Connection telephone line since 2008. And I'm proud to be part of that service. We also have a very informational healthcare provider webpage dedicated to you with frequently asked questions, conversion factor information, which equates to your fees, and 13 on-demand training videos for your staff to watch right now. So you don't have to wait for the calendar event, although we want you at the live events too. Next slide, please. Our outreach and education team meets often, and we discuss how we can improve our products and services and how we can make it easier for you, the healthcare provider, to navigate our system. Because we do hear some people carry that negative experience they had years ago into the future. So we want to help dispel that negative experience and help you navigate the workers' compensation system. We often ask you how you're doing, and we listen to you. We don't just ask you, we listen. Here are some of the ways we can demonstrate that we've listened to you. The first is we made improvements to our webinars over the years by making sure we're transferring that knowledge, just not talking at you, but transferring that knowledge. So it also increases your interaction during our webinars. So we have polling questions that we ask you. We're not sending the grades to your supervisors. It's just so you can think, and we want to put our most important points in those polling questions. So it gives us a gauge of have we done our job? We also increase the time of our webinars from 1 hour to 1.5 hours, usually about an hour of content, half an hour of questions. This gives you the platform that you need to ask us. Even if it's sometimes off topic, we take those questions. So, and at the end of our webinars, we constantly survey you to see how we can improve. We compile that information so that we can make changes throughout the year, and then we look at it when we're planning the next year. So please know that we listen to you and we think you're important and what you have to say. So we're here to serve you guys. Okay, so we're also redesigning our healthcare provider webpage. It is very informational, but we want to make it even more user-friendly. So we're going to focus on images and pictures and less on words so that you can get where you need to go fast. We'll also be adding a flow chart for the independent review organization process for medical necessity disputes on our website as another resource document for you. And just a plug for the next speaker, Santiago, we are offering training on the latest changes to our rules, which are the DD and other certifying billing and reimbursement of MMI. So with that, I will turn it over to Santiago, unless there are questions for me. Thank you so much.
Good afternoon. Hello out there. Allow me to introduce myself. I'm Santiago Calderon. I am the Director of Designated Operations. We're your department that processes your 32s. We handle some of your DD services. We help you get your medical records, approve additional time, and we handle some other things too, such as your reschedules, redesignations, and no-shows. And so thank you for joining us. I want to share some information about the designated doctor billing and reimbursement rule implementation. So hang on, I got some good news for you. Next slide, please. Okay. The rule amendments are to Texas Administrative Codes, Chapters 133 and 134. And these become effective in a few weeks on June 1st of 2024. In case you're wondering who's affected by the rule change, well, we've got that answer for you too. That's your designated doctors, your doctors with MMI and IR certifications, and any healthcare provider who conducts DD ordered testing or evaluations. That's the crowd that maybe you get a referred one of these requests. Okay, next slide, please. So when the rule does go into effect, you're going to notice a significant change on the commissioner's orders and the cancellation orders. You're going to notice that there is now going to be an assignment number, which has three parts. You're going to see those three parts. They consist of the DWC claim number plus DD plus sequence number. Let's take a look at the example. We see the example below has 1234567 8. That represents the DWIC number plus DD and 01. So that means that's the first sequence. But do want to note that the sequence will pick up on the actual sequence number starting 6124. Thus, not all orders will start at sequence number one. Let me give you an example. If an injured worker has had three exams, the next approved DD exam will be sequence number four. Here's another example. If an injured worker has had three DD exams and one redesignation, then the next approved DD exam will be sequence number five. Next slide, please. Okay, let's take a look at an example of the commissioner's order, also known as the 0832A letter. And right here, you'll see that the update to the information block that's going to be found on the first page of the order is what we have highlighted here. And that's going to be the DD assignment number. That's going to be the second row from the bottom. And that's where you're going to see that information placed on the first page. Let's take a look at the next slide, please. And let's see where else you'll see this, the DD assignment number. You're also going to see this on the insurance carrier medical bill processing contact information page. That's the last page of your order. This is going to appear at the top of that page. And again, you're going to want to reference this in the future when you're doing your billing. And let's take a look at the next slide, please. Okay, so you're wondering, where can I learn more about these changes? What kind of training are you guys having? Well, right here, let's pay attention. We have two live trainings. We have the training on May 14th from 12 to 1:30, and then the second training is going to be on May 21st from 12 to 1:30. Any questions that you may have now about this, hang tight. We ask that you do attend one of these trainings. If you can't make one of the trainings, or maybe you just want to make both, or you want to do all three, we're going to have the training recorded, and we're going to add that to the website. So you're going to be able to reference that. You're likely going to want to save the PowerPoint and maybe even somewhere to the link to the videos. Any questions that you do have relating to this, hang tight for one of the trainings. And I feel confident that we're going to answer a lot of your questions that you may have at that training. How about the next slide? Okay, we got some helpful resources for you right here. And we see that we have something also posted in the chat. That is our DWC training calendar. If you haven't already, that's where you're going to want to sign up for one of these events. Get on there now. The event is free, and we encourage you to sign up if you haven't already. Another helpful page is our DD program homepage. You can see the link there, as you can also see the link for the healthcare provider training resources page. And last but not least, you'll be wondering, okay, like, well, what about some of these changes? Can I see a visual? Well, we would encourage you to get on the medical fee guideline conversion factors page. What we're going to do is we're going to update this next month just in time for the two trainings. So you're going to want to refer back to that. And that's going to be have helpful information about some facts and figures that you're going to want to reference moving forward. some helpful email addresses are the ddscheduler@tdi.texas.gov. And that's where you're going to want to email if you have any questions about any of your DD scheduling exams. And DD records, that's where we encourage you to email if you need help with getting medical records, or if you have any questions about any sort of additional testing or any sort of late reports, okay? And next slide, please. That's right. I'm passing this on to Deputy Commissioner of Compliance and Investigations, Mr. Dan LeBrier. Dan, take it away.
Thanks, Santiago. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Dan LeBrier. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of Compliance and Investigations. Next slide, please. All right, we're going to spend a little time today on the administrative side of my house. And next slide. We're going to be talking about the life cycle of a complaint. So basically how we get these things and how we ultimately resolve them. Next slide, please. So when we're talking about complaints, we're going to be focusing on administrative violations. What that means is a violation of the labor code, a rule, or an order of the DWC commissioner. Essentially, the types of laws that give us subject matter over a particular issue. Next slide, please. This is the general outlay of how complaints cycle through DWC. We get complaints from both internal and external sources. They get filtered through audits and investigations where they are investigated. And then those complaints that are confirmed end up in enforcement for the final resolution of the issue. Next slide, please. All right, so a complaint really has three parts to it, which we'll break out on the next slide. But for now, just know that a complaint is a written submission to DWC alleging a violation of, like I mentioned, the labor code or the rules or an order by a system participant. Next slide, please. So as I mentioned, complaints are written. They're alleging violations of the labor code or DWC rules or an order, and it's against a system participant. Next slide, please. As you can see on this slide, any person can file a complaint, although for the most part, it tends to be the aggrieved party. But from time to time, we do get complaints filed by attorneys that represent aggrieved parties. What you're seeing here is a snapshot from our website. If you go to TDI and TDI's website and you click on the workers' compensation tab, you'll get a link to the forms. As you can see down here, circled in red, you have both the English and the Spanish version of the complaint form. Next slide, please. And this is just the DWC 154. This is the actual complaint form itself. The gray area is where you would end up putting your complaint narrative. Next slide. So audits and investigations is the area that I oversee that is tasked with investigating these types of issues, complaints. We have 22 full-time employees, two of which are managers, and we have one director currently serving in A&I. Next slide. This is the layout of the process for A&I to investigate and process a complaint. You'll see it begins with the initial processing. We move on to assignment of the complaint. Then we go into document gathering, document review, and then we get to an outcome, which is essentially our finding on the complaint. Next slide, please. So going through that process a little more individually, at the outset, a case or a complaint is going to be processed into our system. Our software is called ImageWrite, and we process these complaints as they come in the order that they come in. It takes about 7 days to initially process a complaint, and at the end of the initial processing, we're going to assign a problem report ID number, or what we refer to as a PRI number. That number is going to stay with the complaint for the duration of its existence in audits and investigations. Next slide, please. If we get a complaint that's ambiguous or uncertain, we're going to reach out to the complainant and request clarification just to give effect to what it is that's being alleged. Next slide. And once we have that complaint received and looked at, the insurance specialist is going to go ahead and send confirmation of receipt to that complainant. That way they know where they are in the process. Next slide, please. All right, moving through the process here, we're going to get to assigning a complaint. Next slide. And this one's real simple. Basically, a program supervisor is going to assign the complaint to an insurance specialist. That insurance specialist is going to stay with the complaint for the duration of the investigation. Next slide. All right, moving through the process here, we're going to get to document gathering. Next slide. Basically, during document gathering, that insurance specialist who's been assigned to the case is going to request documents from the respondent that we feel are relevant to that complaint. Over on the left, you're going to see a list of some commonly requested things. This isn't an exhaustive list by any means, but these are things that you could probably expect to see being requested from us if you find yourself the subject of a complaint. Next slide. All right, and getting to almost the end of the process here, we're going to go to document review. Next slide. And as you would probably figure, once we have all of those documents in our possession, that insurance specialist is going to compare the evidence that we have to the allegation and see if that allegation in the complaint forms the basis of an actionable violation. Next slide. And then as we draw towards the close here, we're going to get to our ultimate finding. Next slide, please. There are two possible outcomes to a complaint. It's either going to be confirmed or unconfirmed. Next slide. If it is confirmed, you're going to see two things happen. You're going to see that insurance specialist send the complaint and our documentation to what's called a quality assurance specialist. Basically, the quality assurance specialist is going to review everything, look at the evidence, make sure our findings are consistent with that evidence, and make sure all of our ducks are in a row, so to speak. Additionally, that insurance specialist who handled the claim is going to send both the complainant and the respondent a letter confirming the finding, letting them know that we have confirmed the complaint. If it's unconfirmed, you're going to see a similar process. We're still going to send the case along to a quality assurance specialist for review, and we're still going to send a letter to both the complainant and the respondent indicating the finding that it's been unconfirmed. Next slide, please. Okay, so those complaints that do get confirmed are going to wind up in enforcement. We currently have 5 attorneys, although on this list it says 7 attorneys. And the only reason I bring that up is you've probably gotten used to enforcement actions occurring very quickly. Just be mindful we're down a couple of attorneys, and so things might be stretched out a little bit further. We might have a little bit wider of a time frame here. Next slide, please. All right, so once a complaint has been confirmed and it lands in enforcement, the first thing we're going to do is assign it a case number. Like the complaint number, the PRI number, that complaint number is going to stay with the enforcement case for the duration of its lifetime. Additionally, at this stage, the director of enforcement is going to assign that e-case number to an enforcement staff attorney. Next slide. There are 5 ways, generally speaking, that a case can resolve in our system. All the way from dismissal to a consent order and final order. We're going to spend a little time talking about number 4, consent orders, as they comprise the bulk of our enforcement actions. Although, as y'all will see in the subsequent slides, warning letter tends to be the most commonly issued end result to healthcare professionals. Next slide, please. All right, so let's talk a little bit about our process internally for working a consent order. Next slide. So the attorney that's been assigned to the case is going to review the evidence that we have. And if they determine that there is sufficient evidence of the violation, they're going to do a couple of things. They're going to draft what's called a consent order, or at least a proposed consent order at this point. They're also going to recommend a penalty. One thing about the term consent order is it's probably best to think of it as a settlement agreement between the two parties. Consent orders become final orders once they're signed by the commissioner. That's probably a little more consistent with what you're thinking of when you think of a legal order. It's something that basically requires another party to do something. But during this phase, the lawyering happens, the parties continue to negotiate and exchange information to include mitigating information. Next slide. All right, so this is the layout of the process. If we do have an agreement, if we're going to get to a consent order, we're going to peer review that consent order internally, just make sure it's accurate. From there, the director of enforcement is going to read and approve the proposed consent order penalty. From there, it's going to go to opposing counsel. So we're getting yet another set of eyes on the case to make sure everything's spelled out accurately, to make sure we have the violation distilled down to its core elements. And from there, it ends up on my desk, where I also review and approve. And then after that, I send it to the commissioner of DWC for his approval. If he does sign the consent order, the proposed consent order, it becomes a final order, and any penalty that appears in that order is going to be due within 30 days. Next slide. So this is kind of the layout. Generally, this is kind of the Cliff Notes version of the layout if there is not an agreement. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time here, but just suffice it to say, if there's not an agreement, we're going to end up going to the State Office of Administrative Hearings. It's called SOA. And we're going to have a trial, which involves everything you think of when there is a trial. Interestingly enough, the SOA judge that hears the case doesn't actually decide the case. What they issue is called a proposal for decision. And the commissioner will review that proposal for decision and decide to either adopt it or not. If he does adopt it, it becomes a final order. And same thing applies. The penalty therein becomes due within 30 days. Next slide, please. All right, a few practice tips if you're practicing in the area. If you do receive a document request from us, please comply with that document request as soon as it's made. That is a fact and circumstance that we're considering later on in the enforcement arena, whether you complied with the investigation or whether you were essentially non-compliant. If you anticipate some sort of a delay, please let us know. We're human too, and the same things that happen to you all happen to us. People get sick, they leave their employment, kids go out, you know, on summer vacation, the whole shebang, we understand. And any sort of professional courtesy that needs to be extended, we'll do that as the need arises. And last but not least, we don't punish good faith negotiations on the part of attorneys. If you have a case, we encourage you to give us what you have. If it's mitigating information, we want to know about it. And we want to know about steps that you're taking in the future to make sure that these types of things don't happen again. Next slide, please. All right, we're going to get into some data here. We're going to look at audits and investigations and the complaints that they've received so far this quarter, these past two quarters. Next slide. We received 985 complaints over the last two quarters, and we closed 1,154. The bulk of the complaints that we received were, in fact, medical benefit delivery, with a second coming up as indemnity benefit delivery. Over here on the right side of the screen, I think this underscores the links that we go to completely investigate complaints as they come in. Of the 1,154 complaints that we closed, only 423 were confirmed. 545 were not confirmed. I think that goes to show that we are doing our due diligence on this side of things. These are things that we take seriously, both for the complainant and the respondent. And, you know, we're acting accordingly. It's only the things that really are going to be provable that we end up sending over to enforcement. Next slide, please. Okay, so if you look at the fourth column, it's kind of in the center of your screen, you're going to see the complaints received for healthcare providers. We had 55 involving medical benefits, which isn't to be probably not too much of a surprise for y'all. And then second was communications, and then third is going to be quality of care. So just sort of a practice tip here. As far as communications go, they are generally not high on our list of complaint priorities, although they are pretty easily remedied on y'all's part. Just make sure your forms are good, make sure you're checking all the boxes, and you'll be all right. Next slide. All right, we are in the process of doing compliance audits, as we always are over here at DWC. We're done with medical bill processing, and we're still trying to get through death benefits, lifetime income benefits, and initial payment of TIBS audits. But we'll be probably done in June or July, and we'll have a little bit better idea of what's going on in the system and how everybody's doing. Next slide. All right, and the enforcement update, next slide. What we're looking at here is the cases that we've closed as of April 2nd. Of this year. So we closed 189, and then over here on the right, we still have 234 pending as of April 2nd of this year. Next slide. Okay, so here we're looking at cases that we have open. The overwhelming majority is going to be against the insurance carriers and healthcare providers, which is all of y'all. Y'all are a very distant second, which is fantastic. I think that goes to show how much y'all are doing and how much y'all are doing right. You know, 39 pending cases for the entire state of Texas is, I think, a number that we can all be pretty proud of. Next slide. Okay, so here we're having a look at the cases closed by roll. Again, no surprise here, the bulk of them are gonna be against insurance carriers with healthcare providers coming up in a distant second. So those are the number of cases that we've closed. so far in these first two quarters, up to April, actually. So getting a little bit into the third quarter, and things are looking good. Again, I think this is a testament to the health of the system and at least y'all's participation, y'all's role. Next slide, please. And although I mentioned that the majority of our cases resolve by some sort of an order, typically consent order, that's not necessarily true when it comes to healthcare providers specifically. So y'all's data is going to be in the orange. And if you look, you're going to see that the overwhelming majority of the cases that get resolved against healthcare providers result in a warning letter. So what a warning letter is basically we're identifying a violation that we've seen. And we write y'all a letter that says, hey, we've identified this. And although we're not going to assess an administrative penalty at this time, further non-compliance in the future would result in some sort of administrative action. It is what it sounds like. It's a warning, and it's just our efforts to try to get everybody into compliance with the least force possible, right? Next slide. As always, if you want to take a look at what we've been doing in enforcement and the actions we've been taking, you can go to the TDI website. Again, click on that workers' compensation tab, scroll down to the bottom, and you'll be able to go through all of the enforcement orders that we've taken in the recent past. I encourage you to take a look at it, see what's going on, and it'll give you a pretty good indication of what we're seeing and what we're doing. Next slide. All right, real quick with the fraud investigators and the prosecution team. Next slide. So in these first two quarters, we received about 857 allegations of fraud in the workers' compensation system. From there, we've opened 38 fraud cases and we closed 35. We referred two cases over for criminal prosecution to the prosecution unit. And those are the cases that we feel are the strongest allegations of fraud, criminal fraud in the system. And those are the cases that we feel that we can prove beyond a reasonable doubt to a jury. Next slide, please. Over here on the right, I think this is going to be the most pertinent information. So far in these first two quarters, we've had two successful prosecutions. Keep in mind that criminal cases tend to go through the system very slowly, and that's due to a number of factors, almost all of which are outside of our control, but it takes a long time to resolve even a single case. So the fact that we've had two so far this year, I think, is really good. And additionally, this bottom number here over on the right, the restitution recovered of $32,100, I'm particularly proud of that number. That's money that's going back to system participants who were victims of these crimes. That's a good thing. All right, next slide. That's it for me. If you have any questions, feel free to email me at my email address there. I want to say thank you for everybody who was here. Thanks for making it today. And next up will be Martha with Business Process.
Good afternoon, everybody. Martha Levin, I'm the Director for Enterprise Automation Services, and I'll be giving you a brief update about coverage. Next slide. So before we get started, some of you may know that I did work with the Health and Safety Section before I came to Business Process in 2020. Mary Landrum earlier this week was joking that no matter how hard I try, healthcare provider keeps pulling me back in. So I guess my topic today is yet another example of how I'm staying connected to the healthcare provider community, which I love. I'd like to start with a little bit of background about coverage verification, and really everything I'm going to go over today is more of a reminder, more of an invitation for you all to contact us if you have any questions about coverage. Business Process is responsible for collecting data from employers and from Texas workers' compensation carriers, and we use that data to make resources for you that you can access online, and that's in TexComp, or the link to it is in TexComp. But there's also a team of folks that work for me that are ready to give you one-on-one help if you need it with, you know, trying to figure out whether an employer has coverage. If they do have coverage, who the carrier is, you know, we can teach you about that, and we can definitely help you with more complex questions. So first, what I'm going to go over is just some coverage basics. Texas does not require most private employers to have workers' compensation coverage. So employers that are not required to have that coverage are still required to do some reporting to the division. They're just not required to follow the same rules when it comes to healthcare. So governmental entities is another category. All of those guys, Texas counties, cities, school districts, housing authorities, those kinds of entities must have workers' compensation coverage. So you can keep that in mind. Employers that have Texas workers' compensation coverage are referred to as subscribers. Employers that don't have coverage are non-subscribers. Next slide. So there we just have the categories, subscribers. There's some subcategories in that. That could be an employer that's covered by a licensed Texas workers' compensation insurance carrier. They can self-insure, or it could be a governmental entity that self-insures. So all of those three different categories are all considered subscribers. On the right, you're gonna see non-subscriber, which I just stated, you know, employers without workers' compensation coverage. There's also data about non-subscribers out on the website. If you visit the coverage website, you're going to have a link to a list of folks that have told us, employers that have told us that they opted out of workers' comp, which is also important for you all to know. Next slide. So really easy to get to the coverage verification page. It's right on the front page of the workers' compensation homepage. And there's a link that is called Verify Coverage. Next slide. And if you need that individual help, we welcome it. You all are definitely welcome to email us at coverageverification@tdi.texas.gov. We will need the name of the employer, a physical address for the employer, and the date of injury or an approximate date of injury. Now, one of the things I wanted to make clear on this is that when we answer a question about coverage, we're answering for the employer. We have data on whether that employer has coverage or does not have coverage, but we do not have information about individual injured workers. So do not send us any kind of confidential information about your patients, because the only thing we need is the information about the employer. And the employer information, if it is inaccurate, we can't give you good results. So it's always good to check with that injured employee just to make sure that they understand that this is the person that they're getting paid from, instead of, you know, maybe if they're, you know, working for an agency and they were just working on site at another employer. So you want to make sure that that information is accurate, because our information is only accurate if you give us good employer information. Next slide. And now I'm going to turn it over to Operations and External Relations. Thank you,
Martha. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Matthew Posey. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of Operations and External Relations, and I'll just get started with communications. Next slide, please. This year, DWC has initiatives underway to enhance engagement with stakeholders and provide new opportunities for education. The first is our new two-day virtual conference, along with ComCourses webinars throughout the year. This approach will help us reach a much broader audience and enhance opportunities for attendees to earn continuing education credits. Next slide. So save the date for October 22nd and 23rd. We'll have additional details on the annual conference agenda and featured speakers coming soon. The first day of the conference will be opened by a panel featuring some of the state's most influential thought leaders from state government, insurance, and healthcare, having a discussion on the future of AI in Texas and in state agencies. Next slide. And along with the virtual conference, we're also offering continuing education credit throughout the year with our new comp courses webinars. In February, we offered 1 hour of adjusted credit through the TDI for a course on the shared responsibility in successfully returning injured employees to work. You can watch that course at the link on your screen and also find the schedule for upcoming webinars. Our next course in May will cover presiding officer directives. We'll be announcing the date for that very soon. Next slide, please. And a final point in communications, we'll be watching for a new quarterly newsletter coming to your inboxes soon. It'll feature the latest DWC news, new initiatives, and offer tips for navigating the system more easily. Next slide. You can keep up to date on all these initiatives by signing up for our emails. Just use the QR code on the screen, subscribe, and select the topics which you're interested in. And that should wrap us up for comms. Let's go to the next slide and move to air ambulance. Next slide on that one too. In 1978, Congress enacted the Airline Deregulation Act, prohibiting states from enacting or enforcing a law, regulation, or other provision related to a price, route, or service of an air carrier that may provide air transportation under the Act. States across the country are now fighting the interpretation by the courts that regulation of air ambulance services by the states are preempted by the ADA. With the exception of one favorable Supreme Court decision, we're losing that argument right now. DWC's Medical Fee Dispute Resolution Program abated decisions to air ambulance providers on February 5th of 2016. There are currently more than 3,000 pending disputes totaling about $130 million. In light of the lack of clarity from the courts, there's been a recent effort to address this issue through federal legislation. The 2018 FAA Reauthorization Act created an advisory committee to explore options for improving disclosure of charges for air medical services and to protect consumers from balanced billing. In their March 2022 report to Congress, the committee recommended amending ADA as follows. Recommendation 20, the advisory committee recommends that ADA be amended so it does not preempt state laws relating to state regulation of workers' compensation insurance programs with respect to air ambulance services, including monopolistic state funds in Ohio, North Dakota, Washington, and Wyoming. Next slide. The work continues with the Office of State Federal Relations on possible amendments to the ADA during the 2023 FAA reauthorization process. On July 12, 2023, Congressman Gooden of Texas proposed an amendment declaring that state laws regulating billing and payments for air ambulance services within workers' compensation insurance programs fall outside the scope of federal preemption. However, this amendment has thus far been unable to gain traction. DWC has also worked with IAIABC and SOCA on letters supporting a narrow amendment to the ADA addressing state workers' compensation air ambulance services. The reauthorization process is still ongoing as Congress has until May the 10th to pass legislation before the third funding extension expires. As of today, efforts to amend the bill have been unsuccessful. However, discussions continue in DC to find a meaningful solution that will bring clarity to all parties. If you have any, that will conclude that presentation. If you have any questions, please reach out to me or anyone on the external relations team. We'd be happy to get you more information. Thank you. And I'll pass it back over to Commissioner Nelson.
Thanks, Matt. Just to kind of wrap it up here, I want to thank you all for participating again. Again, our next quarterly meeting is going to be a hybrid meeting, so be on the lookout for that and plan to come to our Austin office. It's a great office. It's in a good location, so we're looking forward to that. I did want to echo a little bit of what Mary Landrum touched on when she first got started. There's been a lot of improvements to the workers' comp system over the past 10 or 15 years. And I really do think there's a lot of misinformation out there on what's going on. I think a lot of people are just busy. They haven't seen some of the changes to our system. You know, I was at a conference earlier this week, and there were some people talking on a panel about changes they would like to see made to the system. And one person was harping that he wants to see changes to the testing requirements for DDs, and he wants to see changes maybe this session to get the designated doctors a fee increase finally. And I think it's narratives like that, that just, you know, people don't know about the changes that are going on here that kind of perpetuate this idea that the system is really hard to deal with, hard to operate in. You know, they had a slide in there that only 1% of medical bills or all bills go to medical fee dispute. So I think things have vastly improved in our system. I do think a lot of that is on us though, right? I mean, if people don't know about it, then we're not doing something right to communicate that. So we're going to begin working on ways to kind of spread that message a little bit more, you know, to talk about how this can be a good revenue stream for doctors, about the, you know, reimbursement rates are, you know, 200 to 250 plus percent of Medicare, and, you know, depending on the services that are provided, to talk about how easy it is to participate in our system, that you don't have to get on an approved doctor's list anymore, things like that. So look for kind of more information from us coming out, just to talk about how things have gotten better in the system, kind of from the bad old days that I think a lot of people still remember. So with that, I do just want to open it up to any questions. I'm happy to answer any questions. Anyone who's been on this call or feel free to put in the chat, or you can unmute and just ask me. Or if not, I'll just see you at our next one. Maybe you can ask me in person. Okay.
Jeff, yeah. I have one more thing. This is Amy Rich. For you healthcare providers out there, if you do attend our webinars, the very first slide for every webinar is to let you know about rule activities and ways that you can participate and what's going on in the system. So just wanted to mention that.
Thank you, Amy. Okay, well, there's no questions. We appreciate everyone's time and have a nice afternoon. Have a nice weekend.
Commissioner Nelson?
Yes.
Hi, this is Dr. Wasserberger. I was just putting something into chat about designated doctors or treating doctors. So I need about 5 more seconds of typing and I'll pop it in.
Okay. I feel like the Jeopardy music is playing.
Do, 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 do. There we go. All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank y'all. And remember, this recording is going to be posted on our website. So, and along with the slides as well.
Thank you, everybody.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, everybody.